Previously on the Tony Kornheiser Show.
Why did you stay in your house?
The whiskey what, I drank somewhere along the way.
What are you going to do?
Get up on my feet. I would actually. We have a small little bathroom in the basement that would be perfectly safe. It's a little underground.
Are we gonna, perfectly safe from what? Perfectly safe from a thermonuclear missile?
You're going to die if you go up 270 anyway.
Right, but the notion that you'd be perfectly safe in a bathtub underground
is
crazy.
What you need people to say is, well, I would go to Chatter because
We'd have a missile party.
The Tony Kornheiser Show is on now.
Alrighty then. I'm in day six or so of this bad cold, which causes me to sneeze and cough all the time, including when I'm on television, which some people think makes me endearing, but it just angers me beyond words. I don't mind so much on the podcast. You can just fast forward away from me sneezing and coughing, but it's lousy. Tori Clark is with us. Howard Fineman is with us. Michael Kornheiser, who did such a good job on the reads yesterday, is with us, and we'll do the reads again. Nigel will run the board and do the news. We have Howard later in the show with his own segment. Brian Windhorst with his own. Nigel's sick as well. Everybody is sick. We're at Chatter. Chatter is still good. Chatter is open for breakfast. Even in the snow that I think, and I know that Michael doesn't think this, I think the snow overperformed. I mean, last night on my ride home when I was coughing and wheezing.
Dusting to 1 inch.
My son just said, you're getting nothing. You're just basically getting nothing. And
well, the Beltway was in a snow hole.
I had to sweep this morning, and I had difficulty sweep. It's not shovelable. Howard, did you? I had difficulty sweeping.
Yeah, no, this is a real snow. This is a snow.
This counts as a snow as far as I'm concerned.
And 3/4 inch.
Oh,
it counts as a snow.
I think this is Washington.
Again, because you're further north.
I'm like an inch further north.
Well, there you go.
That's all it is.
Inches added up.
All right, I wanted to talk about some things that we got in the mail today. Bootsy got a present. It's from Emery in Boston, the one Starbucks barista turned attorney who served you and the mishpucha at Michael's graduation. Remember that time, Tony? I do. And remember that time my friends and I sat in on taping of PTI during my bachelor party a couple of Septembers ago? Yeah, those were great. Chris Farley fanboyism aside, I've sent some tribute for Walker. Enclosed, please find a Worcester Railers Hockey Club onesie in the hopes they can be the official ECHL, what is that, East Coast Hockey League, I assume, right? Nigel, you're from that area, of the Tony Kornheiser Show. Hopefully Bootsy hasn't already outgrown it. The Railers are the AA minor league affiliate of your New York Islanders. I got one for myself as my wife and I are expecting at the end of June, if Michael has any advice. I know Nigel occasionally gets to Boston. Should he like to venture an hour west, I'd be happy to host him or any member of the show at a game. This is Emery from Boston.
Oh, lovely.
Legally, to Andre.
Legally, so, I'm not allowed to enter the state of Massachusetts.
Does this Worcester team win in the playoffs?
I don't know. Well, the Capitals don't.
Bootsy, where's that onesie they wear?
I received an ink pad and a bird thing.
That's really nice.
An ink pad with a bird thing and a rabbit thing. And this is from Robert Haig in Frankfort, Delaware. In light of Chessie's recent encounters with the D.C. wildlife, perhaps these ink stamps can serve as a means of tracking a rising body count. Just like the side of a fighter plane, simply stamp the corresponding animal on the wall above Chessie's food dish each time she sends a local critter to that great rabbit hut in the sky. Considering her strong start to 2018, Chessie should have little trouble surpassing Tony in number of animals buried by the end of the season. Ball out, dog. Ball out.
Nice.
It's a very funny
You know player. What else you could do? And going on this idea, you know how the football players get the stickers on their helmets
for
big
like
plays
Buckeyes.
Or big games?
Buckeyes.
She could get a sticker on her backside every time she gets an animal.
Well, we give her a helmet. We stick her in a helmet. That would be fine. And from Alejandro Rosenberg, I picked up, he says, Dear Senor Abuelo, I believe Abuelo in Spanish is grandpa. Dear Senor Abuelo, I picked up these chocolates for you and the gang at a recent trip to Santiago, Chile. These aren't some Subaru owner's artisanal, single-source, shade-grown chocolates, or even worse, Argentinian chocolates. No, this is straight Chilean chocolate, baby. Please enjoy them. In closing, may I please add that I'd like solicitor both figuratively and literally eat it. Thanks for the laugh. So we have chocolate. So this is good. Let me get to what I think is the biggest story of the day, and that is Howard Fineman on Friday sending me a series of tweets. Howard Fineman and Tori Clark. This is the Pittsburgh room. These are people who were born and raised in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, for whom, at their age, the Steelers were indeed a big deal. a big deal with lots of championships.
Still are.
Yeah.
Now, you know, Pittsburgh's got a lot of championships. The Pirates have championships. The hockey team, the Penguins have championships. But nobody's got them like the Steelers got. Right. Howard sends me, I'm not going to bother to read it, but Howard sends me like six reasons on Friday why the Steelers are going to lose. And I immediately assume that this is sort of a Wilbon dodge. You know, Wilbon says this about all Chicago teams.
Right.
To then exceed expectations.
Right. Yeah. So if they win, it's so great. And if they lose, Wilbon says, I got it.
Well, there's an element.
But you said.
There was an element of that. But mostly, I'm not, as people who listen to the show know, I'm not a true broad-range sports fan.
Right.
You know, I love sports, but I don't have the time. But one thing I make time for is obsessive study of the Pittsburgh Steelers. Their ownership, their coaching, their...
You're not fans of the coaches.
Not hugely, no.
Right.
And so, I thought they were going to lose, and I do have the reasons here. The first one was wrong. I said they're essentially facing the first Steel Curtain team of 75. I analogized...
They gave up 42.
That didn't work.
No.
I said Steelers...
They can take Saxonville, and they can stick that in Saxonville.
Well, one of the good things that the Steelers did in the game is that their offensive line did a great job of protecting Roethlisberger. They did.
Yes, they did.
It's a very good offensive
especially
line.
Especially on fourth downs, where Todd Haley should be fired.
I know.
Because if you don't throw a fourth and 12 touchdown, and you got fourth and one, and you got a 6'6" quarterback, do not turn and hand the ball off.
All right. Well, they're an excellent pass rush defense team, which is one of the things to keep Roethlisberger upright was one of the main reasons they put that line together.
Yeah, they did.
They're not as good as at run blocking, but anyway. Then I said the Steelers, especially the weak secondary, are bad tacklers, and that's true. And Mike Mitchell, I've hated him forever. Loudmouth non-performer. He was invisible in the game. I said Le'Veon Bell stunt, which is him complaining before that he went to get out. Tomlin has hack coordinators who are no threat to him and have no imagination to use the layoff to shrewdly game plan. I think that's clear. And I mentioned then Mike Mitchell.
This was detailed.
Yeah, Steelers under Tomlin tend to start slow after layoffs, and that was true also. Anyway.
Well, only if you think the 21-0 or 28-7 is slow.
So I was right on that. And anyway, yeah, I went to training camp this year, actually. I found an excuse to stop by a training camp for a piece about Pittsburgh. So I went to St. Vincent College, and I actually met Tomlin. I spent the day at training camp.
I like Tomlin a lot.
And watched the Steelers, to some extent, have been a family-owned, almost collegiate kind of operation. You know, they trained at St. Vincent College.
Yes.
They got guys who are coordinators who were sons of famous Steelers like Haley and Butler and so forth. And that's good when it works. It's not working right now, and I think it's partly because Tomlin, my sense of Tomlin, who's a very nice guy and smart and so forth, has surrounded himself with no-threat coordinators. These older dudes who, you know, have ties to the Rooney family, who are just not that good and who are erratic. And Todd Haley should have been fired years ago. Keith Butler is not that great.
So let me get to the heart of the matter here.
Right.
When you are right like this, but it hurts, it has to hurt you because you really do like the Steelers. Right. It's in your life. Yeah. Both your lives is better when the Steelers win because that's the team of your youth, if not currently.
But I think there's a connection to how you feel as a longtime fan and what is actually going on with the team. And by the way, over the weekend, I was kind of on and off the grid. I was out of town. I'm getting emails and texts from Howard. Where are you? Where are you watching the game? And I was a little worried. I thought, wow, we better check in on Howard. It is hard.
It's okay.
To
my daughter came out to hold my hand. Literally.
It is hard to maintain the kind of intensity you need to maintain to win big games, to win the Super Bowl. After you've won 4, 5, 6 times, right?
Yeah.
And similarly, as a fan, I love Pittsburgh. I love the Steelers. I always, always, always will. But you know in your heart, unlike the 70s, you know in your heart in 2018, oh, if they don't win, life will go on, right? And yes, Howard's right.
Life will go on unless Kim Jong-un sends that missile and finds Michael bathtub of his house.
I'd like to win another Super Bowl before Armageddon.
Yeah. But it's hard, and it's hard
to... You might not have a shot, because Armageddon may be coming soon.
And Howard's right. The coaching staff, which I think I might have sent a text to somebody as I was listening to this in my car the other day, coaching staff should probably be fired, a bunch of them. And the downside is they're not 21st century coaches, right? The upside is you love the Steelers. You love, I do, that it's still a family
fans,
type
I think
operation.
Fans of any team feel this way, even if they think their team is going to lose and they're justified in their rationale as to why the team lost. It hurts them.
Yes,
it hurts
absolutely.
Them.
What hurts me is what hurts me is such great players playing for such a bunch of dunderheads.
So you really do blame the coaching staff early?
Absolutely. Okay. Bill Belichick, with this talent, even the moderately weak defense, Bill Belichick, they score 100 points. Were you kidding? With the talent they've got? They've got an almost perfect offensive team.
There was one sports story I wanted to get to in the open as well, and this is just personal on my part. This happened yesterday. We didn't talk about it on this show. This is this brawl of sorts, not a real brawl, between the Houston Rockets that now have Chris Paul and Los Angeles Clippers. Chris Paul, Michael Wilbon has an obsessive love for Chris Paul. Thinks he's the greatest player, thinks he's the greatest guy. I say he's an irritant. He's a dirty player. He punches people in the groin. There's lots of tape of this. He's never, much like Tracy McGrady, he's never done anything in the playoffs. You know, I think he's tremendously overrated, which makes for good sparks. In this particular case, Chris Paul was going back to Los Angeles, to the Clippers, where he played for a few years, for the first time since he left. He left voluntarily. This is just like Kevin Durant. Whatever you think of Kevin Durant as a player, he's a great, great player. But it's understandable that Russell Westbrook hates his guts. It's understandable. Kevin Durant walked out on that team, went to a better situation. Chris Paul walked out on the Clippers. So if they hate him, they should hate him. If Doc Rivers hates him, if Blake Griffin hates him, that's fine. It's a very chippy game. And at the end of the game, Chris Paul knows a secret passageway to lead a couple of other guys from the Rockets into the locker room of the Clippers. This cannot be done.
Right.
You cannot do that. That is totally suspendable. That is an antagonistic move that could very easily lead to a brawl. Very easily. And Chris Paul, what makes this worst, is that Chris Paul is the president of the NBA Players Association. I mean, and Wilbon does not want to crush him the way I do.
Is this really about Wilbon?
To some degree.
Yeah, okay. Now, I think in general, we know what I know about sports. You can put in a thimble. Does anybody know what a thimble is anymore, by the way?
It's very tiny.
But I think they often focus on silly things, right? Like football, pass interference. Of course you should try to interfere. That's what you're trying to do, right? But they don't come down hard enough on stuff like that. I heard about that, and the mom of me kicked, and I said, that is insane. Because then what is going to stop the kids from DeMatha and who played Paul VI, right? Right? Or up the road, Bethesda, some of their big rivals, they have to have police out there during basketball games because they're afraid of the kids brawling. Well, why shouldn't the kids brawl if they see what these guys are doing?
Right. So this is, to me, the one thing that can hurt the NBA. That if you have a perception of the NBA that the players, who are empowered by a very player-friendly commissioner, Adam Silver, very player-friendly, if you have the impression, especially now with the stuff about referees, that they don't want referees, they don't want anything, and they're going to get in fights. And I think that is a public perception. Yep. It's probably the only thing that hurt them. I think baseball gets hurt. To me, this is the same thing as throwing at a guy. You wait 3 months and you throw at a guy's head. You should be out for months for that. It shouldn't be a one-game suspension.
How did Chris Paul
football, this doesn't happen because they are Warriors. You know, that you expect it in football.
How did Chris Paul get the role as head of the Players Association?
He's a smart guy and people like him. I don't know. Yeah, nobody likes him.
Strictly by accident, I know something about this because a friend of mine took me to the Houston Wizards game the other week, and I saw the Rockets in person. And they're sort of a muscle team. In a way, I mean, they play that way. It doesn't surprise me, and I think that's
take a lot of threes, though.
Yeah, I know, but they also have an edge to them, and I think
and Chris Paul brought that.
Chris Paul brought that, and I think that's the way they want to play, and that's the way, they want to act. That's going to be their image in
the
league.
Anyway. So yes, it's about Wilbon and his obsessive love for Chris Paul.
You feel better now?
I do. I feel a lot better. We'll take a break. When we come back, Brian Windhorst will talk all about the NBA with us. And what happened yesterday on TV, which is a behind the scenes thing that I will talk about, which was very, I don't know how many people in the audience are actually on TV on a regular basis, but it was interesting. I'm Tony Kornheiser.
You're listening to The Tony Kornheiser Show.
Michael has a read. Michael's so good at the reads. What's the read today, Michael?
This is the Indochino read. They want me to talk about how every man looks better in a suit. I don't often talk about the way a man looks, but when I do, it has to do with his suiting. So suit up.
Yeah.
It used to be you could only get a made-to-measure suit for a special occasion, like your wedding. But now you can get it for those more everyday occasions, and it's great. It fits so much better than a generic off-the-rack suit. So, Indochino is the largest custom apparel company. They make suits and shirts made to your exact measurements for a great fit. I don't know. Try the Nigel way and use a rope.
Yes, it works. It does work.
You'll love the wide selection of high-quality fabrics.
Can I just interrupt and say later in the show we're going to talk about a story about Indochino on the A1 of the Washington Post?
It's almost like I planned that synergy. Guys will love the wide selection of high-quality fabrics and the option to personalize all the details, including the lapel, jacket lining, monogram, and much more. Here's how it works. Pick your fabric. Choose your customizations. You can be like longtime little Sam Angel from Drexel, PA, and put the liner in. This is the Indochino read, which is on the inside
of
his jacket.
Is that right? Yeah, that's fantastic.
Nice. Submit your measurements, and these can be aspirational if you choose.
Yeah.
Place your order and wait for it to arrive.
Like a 36. That's not really a 36.
Right, that comes standard.
36.
Place your order and wait for it to arrive in 3 weeks or less. You can shop online at Indochino.com or visit any of their showrooms.
You can say you're 6'3 and weigh 239. You can say that if you
want. Fake news.
Sure.
Yeah. You can shop online or visit any of their showrooms across North America. Call to action, and this I will read. This week, Tony's listeners can get any premium Indochino suit for just $359 at Indochino.com.
That's got to be good.
When entering Tony K at checkout.
That's got to be good.
It's not just good, it's great.
Yeah.
That's over 50% off the regular price for a premium made-to-measure suit. Plus, shipping is free. That's Indochino.com, promo code Tony K for any premium suit for just $359 plus free shipping. Incredible deal for a perfectly tailored suit, so you'll look like the guy in the $3,000 suit like Job, but only pay $359.
Damn good read.
What a read.
Nice.
That was fantastic.
You're listening to The Tony Kornheiser Show.
Dustin Merkel sends this in from the band The Lively Exchange in Atlanta, Georgia. It's called Who You Foolin'. He sent in three different songs. We played two of the songs.
Yeah, we played him before on the show.
We like him.
Yeah, we do.
Brian Windhorst joins us now. And I said on the tease that I would talk about what happened yesterday. Brian was on our show yesterday. Brian does the show. Brian has a studio in his house in Casa Windhorst. Okay, so he has a studio in the way that Tim Kirkjian has a studio. Some other people, Adam Schefter has a studio. This is designed so that you can, when Brian is home, if you need Brian, who's a great reporter, you can get Brian. So Brian agreed to be on the show yesterday, and my cold medications wore off in the middle because of what happened. Brian, the image would freeze. What did we? It's a 5-minute segment that usually takes 10 to 12 minutes to do. That probably took a half hour. Brian, did you ever find out what happened? Because we had so many false. We had done about 3 minutes, and then Brian began to freeze up. Do you know what that was?
Well, I had been on the road, Tony, for 9 days, and I had literally gotten from the airport and immediately home, took a shower, and was within 1 hour of landing, I was on. And I just think that also it was negative 1 degrees or something like that in Omaha.
Right.
And I just it was on my end. I just wasn't getting, like, last night we were trying to watch Netflix at home because at the end of the day, you're subject to your Wi-Fi. I mean, I have advanced, you know, higher. I pay more for better Wi-Fi, but at the end of the day, this is the technology we have. We were having trouble watching Netflix last night. I just think that the city is frozen, and you had to bear the brunt of it because it took so long for us to get that 5 minutes.
I kept getting sicker. No, I had to tell Wilbon, do the read.
Everything
was
degrading.
Do the read. I can't. I'm going to start coughing so terribly, and Brian would freeze up. And what was, the way it was explained to me, which honestly, Brian, makes no sense at all, because ESPN is a major television network, I was told that the seizures on the part of the transmission were subject to, like, greater cell phone use could compromise the actual signal. That seems crazy to me. But
how technical do you want to get? At the end of the day, Like, I have this, you know, they came to my house. And they spent quite a bit of money. I mean, I've got lights in the ceiling.
Yeah.
I've got all these different backdrops. Like, it, you know, it looks kind of like a miniature TV studio. But at the end of the day, as nice as that is, and I've got microphones, and I've got dampeners on the wall, and I've got screens where I can see myself. I even have makeup here, Tony. At the end of the day, you are somewhat, if everybody on your street is watching Netflix, it's going to be an issue. And
wow.
Here's the thing. Today, I have booked SportsCenter and Outside the Lines. And I told them, I go, listen, it's not any warmer today. I don't know if this is going to work. And so after I'm done here, I've got to try to make sure this works. And this is, unfortunately, part of the penalty we pay for flexibility. But
So you think it has to do with the cold. So maybe you could just light a fire in the studio. Isn't it good Norwegian wood? I mean, maybe you could do that.
You took one for me because normally with the way that you tape the show, you would have had time to redo a little bit of the segment
yeah.
so you didn't cough in national television.
Oh.
But we were literally running out of time. Like, we were headed towards 5:30.
Yes, yes.
And we barely got it in. And by the way, they told me that within like 5 seconds of us rapping, I froze again. So we barely got it in.
We had no contingency plan. In other words, the contingency plan was I was just going to say, thanks, Brian. You know, and we were going to stop in the middle.
People understand that.
Well, I don't know. So the last time Brian was in town, there's a plug for Chatter where we sit now. Not only did Brian come to eat with me and Wilbon, but Brian got chicken parmesan specially made for Brian. How was that?
Okay, first off, it was wonderful. It was a gorgeous piece of chicken. Sometimes...
Came straight from a beauty pageant. It was judged to be beautiful.
Let me just tell you that someone who orders chicken parmesan around the country, virtually every state I'm in, the quality of the piece of chicken can make or break it. It was, considering it was a special order, it was a quality piece of chicken.
Good.
But let me tell you something that made me feel much better. I even though you were very gracious, I was a little bit worried that it was only being made for me. And I felt so much better that the coach Gary Williams ordered it as well.
He did. He got it too.
And also seemed to enjoy it. And
Wilbon also, only gets the chili though, no matter what.
Well, it's his best. It's his,
and it's good.
It is good.
It's
but
very
it's,
good.
You know, actually, I want it to be less good because I want Wilbon to get sick.
Do you think he feels that he has to order it when he's with you?
I think he actually likes it. And he yelled at me. It was about 6 months ago. He started screaming at me that we had taken chili off the menu. And I said, the last time you were in here was 1984. And he said, I want the chili back. And I said, I'll put it back, and I'll call it Wilbon's chili. And so, I mean, he comes in, he brings Lilbon, and they both have the chili. And I think that's pretty good. All right, let me get on with other stuff. You said something yesterday to us, fascinated me. You said that Kyrie Irving hated Tyronn Lue. Where did that come from? Was that... I mean, I've always assumed that Kyrie Irving leaving Cleveland had to do with LeBron James and everybody else was fourth. It didn't matter. But apparently it has also to do with Ty Lue.
Well, I definitely think LeBron was in first place.
Yeah, that's what I think.
In that particular race. This was a revelation to me. I didn't understand it. Over the course of the previous year and a half, if you would have asked me, if I had been on one of your shows and you'd asked me about the Ty Lue Kyrie relationship, I would have given you a glowing report, and that just shows you even somebody who's inside the team, spends a lot of time talking to people, sees everybody behind the scenes, I guess you don't know everything. Because Ty Lue used to defend Kyrie Irving. One of the things we used to do in the media was we used to get on Kyrie about his ball hoggery.
Yeah,
which is what you know. It happened even last night. He took, you know, the Celtics lost a game last night, and you know, at the very end possession, he took a preposterous ball hoggery shot. Okay, sometimes he makes them, but we used to get on him, and we used to count his assists. And I know that that's not always fair, but you know, sometimes he'd go a week and had three assists, and you know, or five assists. And Ty Lue, not only did he defend Kyrie, but he encouraged him. He would tell Kyrie, don't listen to what they say, play your game. And, you know, he had a shaky first couple of games of the 2016 finals. And no, like the first two games out in Oakland, I think he had three assists in the two games. And we were like, my God, the Cavs are getting blown out and Kyrie's not passing the ball. And Ty Lue, I came to his defense. And Kyrie ended up obviously having a 40 points in game five, get the game winner in game seven. And, you know, I always thought, boy, you know, Ty's got his back. You know, he's a former point guard, you know. But, boy, did it get revealed, you know, how much they didn't like him. Now, one, Kyrie and Ty have sniped at each other. Number two, Jackie McMullen, in her fabulous story about Kyrie that came out about 2 weeks ago, detailed a back and forth at a practice that happened last year with between Ty and Kyrie, where basically Ty gave what I thought was reasonable coaching, and Kyrie basically told him to go hit the bricks, and Ty hit the bricks, which is not something you expect from Ty. Normally, you expect him to come back, but I've witnessed remarkable things even since Kyrie left. There was a moment in the opening game of the season, Tony, when the Celtics came to Cleveland, and it wasn't on television, and I only know about it because I happen to know people who sit close to the Cavs bench, where Ty Lue, there was like a stoppage in play, and Kyrie was standing near the bench, or at least standing near the scorer's table where Ty was standing. And Ty said something pretty personally nasty to Kyrie. And Kyrie looks back at him and said something personally nasty to Ty, and in fact got a technical foul for doing so. It's on the record. You can go back and look
it up.
Nobody paid attention or remembered it because, you know, with everything that happened with Gordon Hayward that night, it was just lost in the fray.
Right, right.
But, yeah, so it's a long answer. I'm sorry. But, there is significant animus in that relationship.
So this is my question. Obviously, any team with Kyrie Irving is a better team than without him. Even with Isaiah Thomas, you're a better team with Kyrie Irving. Did anybody think at any time, let's just fire Ty Lue and tell Kyrie you're going to stay and that's the end of this? Or was his animus towards LeBron such that they couldn't have kept him no matter what?
I think the LeBron thing was the bigger issue. But, you know, something very interesting was revealed last week by Greg Popovich. He talked about how LaMarcus Aldridge came to him and asked for a trade last year. And it's not an apples-to-apples comparison because Aldridge and Irving are different players, different values, etc. But still, they're second-best player. And Popovich was stunned. They knew he was unhappy, kind of like the Cavs knew Kyrie was a little bit unhappy, but they didn't see that coming. And Pop, you know, they did try to trade him, but Pop, you know, subsequently, he described this, had several dinners with Aldridge, talked about, you know, hey, how can we work together, looked in the mirror and said, I realized I wasn't doing the best job, you know, and they ended up, not only did he end up staying, and he's having an all-star season, but they signed him to a contract extension. I mean, it is a lesson in franchise, in crisis management, in player-coach relations. And so I was like, boy, look at the way the Spurs handled that and look at the way the Cavs handled it, which is where they basically, panicked and traded Kyrie for, I didn't think, a really prudent trade for very,
but,
very
But don't reasons. You think, Brian, don't you think that that's because of the stature that Greg Popovich has had over all these years? Tyronn Lue doesn't have anything like that. I mean, Popovich, if Popovich comes to you, you will listen to him. And if he then is beneficent in what he does, it's going to have a greater effect than a coach who's a second-year coach, really.
I suppose that's true. However, Ty Lue came with this tag of being a player's coach.
Yeah.
But the point I'm making is that wasn't even an option in Cleveland. Number one, there was
right.
no GM to conduct
right.
it.
Because, that's right.
And then number two, if these guys really didn't like each other as much as that's apparently true, there was no chance of Ty Lue trying to save the situation. And look, I'm not here to compare Ty Lue and Greg Popovich. I'm just here to say, look what happened with the Spurs when they got that hand dealt to them, and look what happened with the Cavs.
Let me get to, I mean, the NBA is all abuzz over the fact that the Cavaliers have lost, like, 6 out of 8, and is something terribly wrong. And most people, and I count myself in that group, figure that LeBron is going to make some change, as he always does at some point in the season. But what I wonder about is this. LeBron understands, does he not, that the Warriors are simply better than everyone, right? They're just better, right?
Yes. Yes. In another time and place, the Cavs might have a couple of titles with this group.
Yes.
And now, and instead, I continue to submit that them squeezing that 2016 title is one of the great accomplishments in NBA history. And that LeBron pulling them back from 3-1 down, whatever the circumstances were, is one of the greatest accomplishments in NBA history. It's the greatest accomplishment of his career. And the Warriors may reel off, you know, 5 or 6 titles in 7 years, and the only thing that will stop them will have been that LeBron group. So
that's right.
Yes.
They've got LeBron, 4 of the best 20 players in basketball. They got 4 of them.
And they have a tremendous team spirit.
Yeah.
And they have a great coach, and they have a great fan base. It's the perfect alignment of time and place that I've ever seen on the team.
Agree.
I haven't been around long enough to be able to talk about the Celtics in the 70s or 60s or whatever, but I've never seen anything like it in any sport.
I'll get you out of here on this. You know LeBron better than anybody else in the media knows LeBron and all of that. Just a very random thought. Do you think that he'll retire at the wrong time? Do you think he'll wait too long as opposed to too early or get it just right? I assume he thinks about this.
Yeah, so 2 things I'm going to say about that. Number one, LeBron has never had a significant injury. So one of the things that we often see with players is they have an injury. You know, Jordan, he had knees. Kobe had his Achilles and his also knees. A lot of times you see injury basically determine the end of a career. LeBron's never had a significant injury. So maybe someday that injury will come and that will do it. But because he's not had an injury, he doesn't have a weak spot. And I think as his game ages, he's still going to be 6'8 with that incredible body. He's so much like Karl Malone in that way. And Karl Malone played 20 years. And Karl Malone was terrific until he had an injury right at the end with the Jazz, and that's what ended it. But in for those first 18 years, he was terrific, and I sort of see him that way. Secondly, LeBron harbors a desire, and this has been true for a couple of years, and he's somewhat started to leak and talk about it over the last year. He wants to play with his son.
What?
He wants to play with his son. His son is in 8th grade. I don't know whether he'll be good enough to play in the NBA when he's 19. In fact, the rule will probably be changed sooner. It'll be 18. I don't know. LeBron probably doesn't know. But his son is very good. His son is one of the best players in his age group. And LeBron dreams of playing in the league. He wants to play on the same team, but dreams of playing in the league with his son being his last year. So that would be, you know, his son. See, his son was born in the fall of 2004. So he's 13 now. He's in 8th grade, I believe. And so you'd need 4 or 5. No, I think he's in 7th grade. I think you would need high school. You'd need 5 or 6 more years. So he'd need to get to about 38 or 39 to do it, assuming that his son is good enough to come into the league that fast. And, you know, Dwayne Wade's son is a couple of years older than LeBron's son. Dwayne Wade's son is dunking. And the two of them
really?
Might have grown up playing.
Is Bootsy dunking yet?
Wow, Bootsy's not dunking. No, Bootsy.
So that, you know, I can't predict what's going to happen tomorrow, Tony. I can't tell you what's going to happen
that's
in 6
interesting.
Years. But the concept that LeBron would retire early because he wants to go move on, no. If his health holds up and his son is what we think he can be, that's what he wants to do. The Ken Griffey Jr.
Fantastic.
And LeBron loved Ken Griffey Jr. as a player when he was, he doesn't care that much about baseball, but he loved, think about when LeBron, grew up in the late 80s, early 90s was his childhood. Ken Griffey Jr. was an icon at that time. And the guy who handles LeBron at Nike, a guy named Lynn Merritt, before he handled LeBron, the guy that he took care of at Nike was Ken Griffey. So Ken Griffey Jr. was at LeBron's first ever game. They have a relationship. So I think that LeBron would love to be the first player. I don't think there's ever been a father-son play at the same time.
Not at the same time, no.
I think he'd love to have that happen.
That's fantastic. I never heard that. That's really good. Thanks, Brian. Talk to you soon.
All right. Take care, Tony.
Brian Windhorst, everybody. We love Brian Windhorst.
What a great reporter. No wonder they built a studio in his house.
He's terrific.
Yeah.
We'll take a break. We'll come back with news. Nigel will do news. I'm Tony Kornheiser.
You're listening to The Tony Kornheiser Show.
know we have the rabbi who sends us songs that are very good?
Misha Ben David.
Yeah. This is Haley Slaughter. She is a rugby referee and a rugby player. And she sent us this song. See Yourself to Be Yourself is the album.
That's right.
What is the name of this?
Make a Memory
is her song. It's she wrote it in November in Tucson, the night before my Women's Premier League semifinal between New York and San Diego. It's lucky for me as I had my best game all season.
Nice. It's lovely.
Isn't this fantastic?
I have an idea. For the great people who send in this amazing music from all over the country, in fact, the world, and I travel a lot, and my, trying to think of what you do when you get to, Altoona, PA or whatever, it'd be great if we had a digital map, Nigel, and you were going to Altoona, and you could push Altoona, and up would pop littles who have sent in music, and maybe they're performing in Altoona when you're there.
That is a very good idea. Can you do that?
I can't do that, no, but that sounds like a great idea for you, Tori.
Can someone make that happen?
Throw that right back at me.
Tori, that was such a great buildup about how I travel all around.
And then you end up in Altoona.
I thought Paris, Altoona. But yeah, Altoona's worth having good music.
Michael, if people like Haley Slaughter from Oxford, Florida want to send in their songs, how do they do it?
Send it into the show. Jingles at TonyCornizershow.com. That is a great idea, so please, Tori, look into that.
Well, you don't have to do it yourself. Why can't we get Brett Snyder to do that?
Sure.
He runs our media, our social media. Why can't he do that?
I've had trouble putting up the actual map, so I'm not sure I could come up with a digital map.
I live in Washington. I don't do it.
Will the map be upside down?
You could go places and you could see littles perform if in fact they perform. One of the things that people say to me all the time when they come here and they listen to the show, why don't you have a littles menu? And I go, well, why don't you just order off the regular menu? What's the difference?
Right.
Oh, no, we want a special Littles menu.
If it causes them to come here and buy food and pay money to you?
Yeah, I would be happy. Yeah. I'd be happy, but it's just odd.
Come with crayons?
A little photocopy.
Crayons would be good.
Yeah.
Crayons would be good. And like a sign-up board, and like so other people would know. Right. Because that is...
Littles in the house today.
That's an easy conversation to have.
What? And again... Building on our social media.
Isn't everybody in here a little?
Not necessarily.
No.
Yeah.
But you could constantly show what's trending, what the littles are eating.
Now you're getting really complicated.
Nigel's coughing his brains out.
It's analytics.
I know what this is like.
Big data comes to the Tony Kornheiser show.
I fear I have what you have, but I think I'm a couple of days behind you.
It's no good.
Yes, we'll start off with college basketball, Mr. Tony. I know there were some games last night you wanted to talk about.
Villanova here in D.C.
Villanova here tonight against the Georgetown Hoyas. Yeah. Villanova 16-1, the number one team in the country.
There were two things I wanted to talk about. Purdue crushed Wisconsin.
Yes.
Purdue's really good.
Yeah, 78-50.
Nobody knows anything about Purdue. Purdue's really good. Two, that kid Trae Young, who everybody knows about for Oklahoma. I watched him the other night against TCU. And he had 9 turnovers. That's a lot. I mean, the ball's in his hand all the time, but 9 turnovers is a lot. Last night against Kansas State, he had 12. Ooh. That's way too many.
Ooh. Yes.
That's way too many. At some point, when you're Lon Kruger and you're the coach at Oklahoma, you need to develop a second ball handler. You can't have – you're going to lose games if your lead guard has double-figure turnovers in every game. It's just not – Trae Young is being exposed as a freshman on a very, very large stage. He's a wonderful player, but 12 turnovers is too many.
Yeah, just can't have that. 87-69, the final in that.
Can't have that.
Yes. Some others, UNC won last night.
I don't care about the other games.
Oh, you don't?
No, I don't.
I thought you said you wanted to talk about those.
No. I want to talk about Mudbound in a little while, but you go ahead. You do the news.
Aaron Rodgers has a new woman in his life.
What do we think about
this? After breaking up with Olivia Munn last April... Now it is confirmed he is dating race car driver Danica Patrick.
What do we think about this?
Not going to work.
Why?
Because you can't have two high-profile people from two high-profile industries and have it work. It won't work.
You sure?
Positive. Move on.
I like Aaron Rodgers. Played golf with Aaron Rodgers. Really like him.
Yeah.
I've met Danica Patrick, and she's a tiny little thing with the toughest handshake.
That's right.
Got a handshake like Dexter Manley.
Right.
Like she kills it.
Break your hand.
But
that'll work well in...
I remember, I remember the Lindsey Vonn Tiger Woods thing.
That's right.
Exactly.
And that was meteoric, and then flamed out. And I thought to myself, you can't date Lindsey Vonn. You can't date a downhill skier.
Right, because
you can't date the male downhill skier. You can't date the female downhill skier. They go down a mountain at 100 miles an hour and it's ice. They have no caution. They're crazy. They're totally crazy. So you can't, that cannot last, I wouldn't think. But this, you're...
Yeah, now, Tori, Alex Rodriguez dating Jennifer Lopez for a while now,
what do you think?
I think.
What do you think about
they
that?
They seem to be rather happy.
They're both insane.
Well,
absolutely insane. Okay, what's the race car? I'll give this a chance. What's the race? Well, she's not racing anymore, right? Hasn't she stopped?
Well, yeah, but she's still...
Or she's shifting? What's the race car season versus the football season?
Race car season is much longer.
But is it, do the months overlap is what I'm asking.
Yeah,
yeah, sure.
Because the race car season
then they won't
year.
Be able to see each other that often, and she'll be somewhere, and he'll be playing a game, and she'll see a picture of him.
Well, the NASCAR's in every attractive. Couple.
There's a little overlap between the seasons, but there's a number of months where there wouldn't be.
Yeah. Yeah, like February, March, April, May, something
like
that.
Yeah,
because he's not playing. I just think that she's like...
Well, you met her. Does she strike you as a
like
crazy person?
No, but she wants... She wants to drive 400 miles an hour if she can.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But how many big, you know, celebrity with the ones that work, the two big celebrities married?
From different sort of fields of celebrity?
Well, even the same. They seldom work.
Paul
right?
Newman and Joanne Woodward were
Paul
married
Newman
for 100 years.
Paul Newman and Joanne Woodward worked, but that is one of the very few.
Yeah, I think that's probably true.
Yeah.
But it worked for a million years. Well, right now, Steven Spielberg and Kate Capshaw. And
but
that's
her
going
career,
on
most people would say, she took a step
she
back
did,
in her
she did.
Career.
Oh, that's right. You cannot pursue that.
Right. You cannot
that's
pursue excellence.
I just had the image of Danica Patrick driving the kids to school.
Yeah, at 100 miles an hour.
100 miles an hour.
And just throwing them out the side of the car. Yeah.
Don't worry, Aaron. I'll take them this morning.
She's small. But race car drivers are small. They want to be lightweight. And they got to fit in the car.
The kid's kind of bouncing back and forth in the back seat.
Yeah. What else?
A story you referenced earlier in the show.
The Indochino story.
Indochino.
This is fascinating.
Among one of the companies that you have to give personal data to them. Obviously, we talked about that with Indochino. And again, we love Indochino. I do.
Well, when you say personal data, you have to give your waist size and your chest size.
Right. But now there are more complicated data points that other companies are looking for. Like what sort? Like let's say, what do you not want to feature when you dress yourself, or what would you like to flaunt when you dress yourself? Are you pregnant? All these sort of things.
But pregnancy is not a permanent condition.
No, it's not. It's not. But these are the sort of data points that they're trying to find to get a more complete.
What is the great fear here? What is the fear here? You're submitting your because the story is a panic story.
Yes.
That companies will have all of your information. What are you going to do with my height and weight and inseam? What are you going to do with it? You're going to build a robot of me? Well, I don't care about that. What are you going to do with my measurements?
Are they protecting that information, or are they going to sell it to somebody?
Who are you going to? I don't care who you sell it to.
Well, they can sell it to other companies. And
who else wants it? You think ExxonMobil wants it? I don't.
Well, no. Let's use the pregnancy example. Let's say that I am working for a company like Bye Bye Baby. Excuse me. And I want to target you with diaper ads and stroller ads and try and take that and use it to my advantage.
Okay. Is that terrible?
Well, it's just sort of
everything leads to the conclusion of 1984.
Is it dishonest if Indochino... Is it Indochino?
Indochino.
If Indochino had said, right, we will share this information. I mean, most of them, it's a little tiny print, but most of them will tell you whether or not they share the information.
Indochino's...
What are you going to do with my waist?
No, Michael's right. It's more an annoyance, I think.
That's not all they know, Tony.
I think
what else do they know?
Indochino is more innocent. It really is just your measurements.
Right.
It's these other companies that are really getting more aggressive with...
With what?
Sort of,
and for instance...
I've not been on this questionnaire, but there's an 85... questionnaire that you're supposed to go through to give them sort of what you want in clothes.
I have it. If you said you were 6'3 and 239, even though you were actually like 276,
right,
then they could sell that information to someone who could then target that person
liars.
With obesity drugs. Yeah, liar ads.
Yeah,
obesity drugs.
I open up my phone
ads.
Every day and some other company, and I can't even unsubscribe to this stuff.
Yes.
Some other company, and it just, okay, so I just hit delete.
Yeah.
Yes.
I just hit delete. I mean, I don't think that everything winds up where someone snatches your body, kills you, and puts in a replacement
Tony,
robot.
Tony, in the big data marketing business, nothing is extraneous. And if you're willing to share your perception of yourself, which is really what they're measuring your perception of yourself, your tastes... You know, the body measurements also might give them clues to what type of merchandise, other kind of merchandise you want. These are
Why is this nefarious?
I'm not saying it's nefarious.
Well, some people think it's an invasion of privacy.
But the whole idea of marketing these days is to invade your privacy.
That's exactly right.
To get as close to a data hologram of you, of all of your tastes, of all of your interests, of all of your news. This is true in the news business, too, by the way, because of the fact that it's all online now. There's a whole lot more that can be learned about readers, what their news interests are, and so forth.
So, you know, with all the information, create a best friend for me. And have this person
a virtual
knock
best
on
friend?
My,
I
no,
think
a
that's
person,
impossible.
And come to the door, and then we'll be pals. We'll be pals. I'm at my age. I'm not afraid of this. Now, if you're younger, maybe you ought to be afraid of it. I'm not afraid of it. Well, I don't view everything as nefarious.
My sense of it is in terms of millennials and lower. They're generally speaking not afraid of it because they like the convenience of it. They're willing to trade the convenience of it.
I am.
For the invasion, what we would think of, we old folks would think of as
invasion of the body snatchers. Here are my measurements.
I get ads every single day for park ranger jobs that are open.
Why do they think you'd want that job?
I have no
job?
Idea.
Because of the camels.
No idea. Years ago, I thought maybe I wanted to be a park ranger, but I don't like the hats or the color. Olive green, which you have on today, is not a good color for me. So that kind of ruled that out. But every day, I get a notice about openings for
now,
park ranger
how
jobs.
How do you think they figured that out?
Yeah. I have no idea.
Because, in fact, earlier on in your life, you did.
But that was pre-interweb days.
Hmm.
Yeah.
You've never said to anybody, you know, I'd really thought about being a park ranger.
Not for 30 years.
You never had some sort of crush on Smokey the Bear?
Well, that's a different story.
Who didn't? Honestly, who didn't?
That's just between me and the bear.
A phrase that came up this morning in the very extensive pre-show meeting that we had, Woke Bay, and you wanted to talk about this.
What is it?
Woke Bay. Right?
Two words.
W-O-K-E is one word. Bay, B-A-E is another word.
Yes.
This was used in a story about, Michael, what's it, Aziz Ansari?
Yes, that's correct.
And we're not going to go into the back and forth on Aziz Ansari and whether he did or did not do something terrible to this particular girl as is being accused, because we don't know the facts of this. We don't. But the story referred to a woke bay, which I'd never heard of, which Nigel had never heard of.
No.
Which Tori had never heard of, and then Howard had heard of it.
Yeah, of course she knew.
Brian was a woke bay. Yeah. What does it stand for?
Go ahead, Howard.
First of all, woke.
Anagram.
No, two things. First of all, the word woke. Have you heard that used separately?
I woke up.
Okay. No, woke is now means that you are aware of the injustices and the contradictions and the ironies and the difficulties of modern.
No, I never heard that
life
word.
In a diverse society.
I never have heard that word.
Whether you're
another
woke,
example of
whether,
how old I am.
You're woke to that or not. Or you're either asleep or you're awake to it, but woke. You've been awake. You're
okay.
Awake.
It's and what
awake.
Does bay mean?
Bay means girlfriend or boyfriend, right? It can be either.
Yeah, it's an
I think you could even take away the word girl or boy. You know, it's like
man or
other.
Woman, other person, any
other.
Person of any gender.
Other.
When did this happen?
When did
bae become that? B-A-E.
I think that's well. Again, it's very derivative.
I thought that
here.
Was your boo. Now it's your bae.
I don't know when that changed.
That might be from which it is derived. That might be. I think the last year or so you got bae. I think this is a sign that
I'm hopeless.
Tony,
I'm hopeless.
We are talking like we've just returned from Altoona or some foreign place.
Right.
And,
Mars.
And we're bringing back the anthropological study of this other society. In fact, this is America today, Tony.
Yeah. Woke
it's not
bae.
The one we live in.
Woke bae.
Everybody knows what that means.
Well, I didn't.
I think
I say
is...
everybody who's, you know, alive.
No, I think this is a sign that Michael is getting older because if Michael was familiar with it, he would have.
I was familiar with it.
Sure, he was.
You didn't ask me.
Yeah, of course.
I assumed you
would
know.
He's down at the end.
I assumed you would know. Anyway,
have you heard of a town called Oymyakon?
No, what's that?
Oymyakon is the coldest town on the planet.
Is it in Russia?
Yes, it's in Russia's Yakutia region. 500 people live there. Temperatures average. This is average. -58 degrees Fahrenheit in the winter.
Why do they live there? Have they been sent there? Is that a gulag?
That's just where they grew up, you know? I think when you live there, it's kind of hard to get out of that small town because it's 500...
I grew up in a small town. Learned to breathe in a small town.
Right.
Small town's where I want to be.
It's closer to the Arctic Circle than it is to the nearest town. Yes. 500 miles away from the nearest town, but it's closer to the Arctic Circle.
They got any good? They got chatter? Can I do takeout?
I'm going to tell you what the, by the way, the old-time record low.
They eat reindeer, right?
Well, what they eat is actually sort of fascinating because they can't heat things up. Cars have to be left running at all times, otherwise they'll seize up. Well, they won't be able to start them again.
You can't just leave a car running at all times.
That's what they do. They have to, otherwise the battery's
Who's running work. The gas station?
Somebody very rich.
Yeah.
The old-time record low service. In 2013... Minus 98 degrees Fahrenheit. It's dark 21 hours a day in the winter.
Why, again?
Why do these people live there?
What high school do they go to?
Well, there's two. There's Oyamakon, East Oyamakon,
yeah.
And then Central.
And Central.
Central Oyamakon.
Yeah.
Big rivals.
Yeah.
So what they have to eat, let me just find this real quick.
How hot does it get in the summer?
It's about 150.
Yeah.
No. It does not say in the summertime.
What do they eat?
They have to eat, okay. Some regional specialties include stroganina, which is raw, long-sliced, frozen fish, reindeer meat, as you
yes,
said.
Yes, reindeer meat.
Raw, frozen...
The reindeer say to each other, let's get out of here before the winter.
Right,
because we're dead.
Raw, frozen horse liver. And how about this?
Well, everything's frozen.
Right. How about this? Because they can't grow crops because it's obviously too cold. Ice cubes of horse blood with macaroni. You may want to feature that here.
I would do that. I'd put that on the menu.
Ice cubes.
Frozen raw horse liver.
Horse blood with macaroni.
That's awful.
Well, this makes us feel much better about our minor cold weather here in
Washington. Can I just mention Mudbound for a second? Mudbound is one of the movies that I wanted to see. I'm going to vote. I get to vote in SAG-AFTRA.
Yes.
And I have to vote by Friday.
That's right.
And I want to see Mudbound. And I don't know if I've said this. I think I have. That the best movie I saw all year to this date for me, I haven't seen them all, is Lady Bird. I loved, totally loved Lady Bird. Mudbound last night, it is, I left, and it's in my own house. I walked out of the room in which the movie was playing a little more than halfway through because it was, and not that it isn't good, because it's really, really good. It is relentlessly bleak. It is so bleak. It's so dark. It's so unoptimistic. It's set in Mississippi. In that period of time, just immediately prior to World War II, then World War II, then immediately after World War II, and the land is unyielding of crops, and it has terrible racism in it, and the characters.
Isn't the title just a bit of a giveaway?
It is just it's one of these movies, and it also struck me, and I'll ask Anne about this. It struck me that it was less a movie and more an ongoing television series. I mean, I could have seen it as a television series.
Right.
But I, you know, it's one of those things, I'm sure it's great, and it's not for me. And when I left, I thought, what's the name of that great, great movie, the greatest comedy of all time with Jack Lemmon and
Mr.
Tony
3000?
Curtis? No. Jack Lemmon and Tony Curtis and Marilyn Monroe.
Some Like It Hot.
Some Like It Hot. They don't make comedies anymore. They make raunchy comedies, like the Melissa McCarthy comedy or the Will Ferrell comedy,
right.
But they don't make, like, since movies like Sleepless in Seattle or When Harry Met Sally, those are 25 years old at this point, they don't make sprightly...
So you distinguish romantic comedies from pure comedy?
Well,
because there are a lot of rom-coms.
I would watch a pure comedy that is not just a raunchy comedy.
Well, I think they put, at least for the Golden Globes, they put Get Out in the comedy category.
I don't think it's a comedy.
No, that was not a comedy.
I didn't think it was a comedy. So they don't. People don't make those anymore, probably because they feel that nobody will go see them.
Some people told me the Three Billboards Outside Ebbing,
Minnesota.
That's not a comedy. It's supposed to be a comedy.
That's not
also
a comedy.
That's not a comedy either.
No. So I
ask the sheriff.
I mean, have you seen Mudbound?
No, I've not seen it.
Tori?
No.
Michael?
Probably won't.
No.
No, I've not seen it.
And you've
yet.
Seen everything.
I've seen a lot. I've not seen that. I'm waiting to
Anne
see
it. Anne said it was the best movie of the year.
She loved it. She loved Lady Bird as well. I think she said Lady Bird is her favorite of the year as well. So, but
we can have as well. You have your favorite of the year.
As well as you, because you liked it as well. That's what I'm saying. But she loved Mudbound.
She had Mudbound 1. She put a number on it.
Oh, I thought she had.
So that's her favorite. And I'm not saying that I'm sure it's great. I just,
Right. Yeah.
You know, it's rough. I got a cold. I'm cold.
Yeah, I'm
wheezing. What I'm interested in is that you walked out of the room. Couldn't you have just turned off the set?
No, the dog was still watching.
Yeah. Jesse wanted
to finish. She wanted to finish. She didn't come upstairs till the movie was done. Anyway.
She figured there was a bone
let's
in there somewhere.
Let's get out of here. We will have old Howard. Howard has his segment when we return. I'm Tony Kornheiser.
This is the Tony Kornheiser Show. Tony
Kornheiser Show. That went forever. Michael has a read. What are you reading?
Upside.com. This one has a casual, jaunty tone to it.
Ooh.
So enjoy.
We love that.
How's your things to do in 2018 checklist coming along? Mine's a work in progress.
Well, I had watched Mudbone. Mudbound.
Mudbound.
Mudbone would have been better.
That's why Chessie wanted to watch. She thought that's what it was.
I do have one thing on mine that belongs on every business traveler's list. Book your next business trip at upside.com/Tony. When you do, you'll get the better business travel experience you deserve and a free pair of Bose SoundLink wireless headphones. More on that in a second. First, though, here's why you'll love upside.com. Only Upside has customer service specialists who look out for you every step of the way on your business trip, handling any problem that might pop up. They're hard work at 24/7 to make sure your flight, hotel, and rental car all go off without a hitch. They're available on demand by chat, phone, and email whenever you need them, sort of like Steve Sands.
He's available.
Only Upside monitors your business trip around the clock, proactively keeping you posted on everything from the weather in the city you're going to changing your flight home so you can adjust your meeting schedule. Have you ever experienced that level of service before on a business trip? Nope. All that, plus Upside has great prices for flights, hotels, and rental cars. Now, to get your free pair of Bose SoundLink wireless headphones, go to upside.com/Tony, where you, when you book your first business trip, upside.com/Tony. You deserve a better business trip. Headphones available while supplies last. Must be first Upside purchase. $600 minimum purchase required. See site for complete details.
Michael does a great
nice
read.
Job.
He's got a really good voice.
You might lose your ride for the reads.
Yeah, right.
Mike, they ought to start paying Michael extra money.
It's sort of hard where you don't know where
the
sentence is going.
Like LeBron playing with his son.
Yeah. Well, you know, I play golf with Michael, and I figured I'm stunned by that Brian Windhorst. I know we're in the middle of a read.
No.
The level of talent to get to the NBA.
Oh, it's enormous.
It's not just because you genetically qualify.
Have you seen this kid's highlights?
No, are they great?
Yeah, he looks like he's about ready.
Is that right?
Yeah. Yes.
13, that's
wow,
amazing.
I had no idea. Okay, all right, that's it.
This is the Tony Kornheiser Show.
Old guy radio for the day. Rolling Stones.
Some of the great cowbell in history.
In honor of Mick Taylor being 69 years old. Mick Taylor, if I remember correctly, replaced Brian Jones after that unfortunate incident in the pool.
That's right.
And then,
well, Brian Jones
left.
Mick Taylor left. Brian Jones was fired from the band. They kicked him out before the unfortunate incident in the pool. And the recording sessions for this song, Honky Tonk Woman, began with Brian Jones, and then he left the band. Or was forced out. And this was Mick Taylor's first sessions with them. And
Mick Taylor left the band.
Yeah.
He left the Rolling Stones.
Yeah, he was only with them for like three hours.
Is there life after? What are you doing? It's like Kyrie Irving times 10,000.
He said, he's been asked about it. He said, oh yeah, when I joined the band, I never thought that I'd be with them to the end of time. It was just something I wanted to do for a little bit and then move on and
what's
do my
he doing
thing.
Now? Running a Pep Boys in Surrey?
I think he is running
Pep
Boys
in Surrey.
What is
the point of that?
Well, apparently he also had conflicts with Mick and a little bit with Keith.
Well, that hurts you.
He never really... He said Mick promised him he'd get a lot of credit on songs and he never really did. Just a couple of songs here
and
there.
You're the Rolling Stones.
Yeah, you would think, but I guess he wanted more.
They're still playing.
Different.
They're still making...
They are.
They make... Tens of millions of dollars a year. They play 100 times.
And it stinks because the albums that he was on was like Let It Bleed, Exile on Main Street. And
great albums.
I think those are some of the best albums they ever did. I really love what he brought to the band. But
I am floating away in a sea of tea and lemon and honey.
Yeah.
I can't go 20 minutes without running to the bathroom.
Yeah.
The tea goes right through you. It doesn't help at all. Then my daughter-in-law, did I tell you about my daughter-in-law's idea? Which is to gargle with hot salt water.
That's an old, it doesn't have to be hot salt.
I've been doing that.
But that's an old remedy.
Is it any kind of salt? Could it be the salt you put on the sidewalk?
I've been doing that.
Like we have kosher salt, extra kosher salt.
Yeah, that we're using a chatter. I've take the emergency in the morning. At night, I take the cough medicine.
Should we be letting you drive?
I can drive. No, I'm not. At night, I don't take any real medication. I take these
potions,
shaman things. like hot salt water.
So you don't take like NyQuil to knock yourself out at the end of the night?
I do not.
No, that doesn't mix well with the wine.
No, I take some wine and then I watch most of Mudbound, then I go get the beer.
Wine is absolutely the worst thing to consume.
It is?
Yes, when you have a cold.
Is it?
Really?
Yes.
I thought it was starve a cold, feed a fever. I didn't hear anybody saying if you have a cold, don't drink wine.
It's not good for you.
All right.
It stuffs you up even more.
This is the voice of Howard Fineman, who is no longer the intergalactic editor of the Huff Post. Now with NBC.
I returned. Yes. I was summoned by the peacock.
Back on Earth.
To return to Earth. It's kind of like that scene at the end of Gravity, you know, when she comes down out of the sky, out of the galaxy.
You're still watching the movie by that point? Because I had left that movie much before that.
You sort of land on the beach and you stagger your way into NBC, but I'm loving it because it's great. And it consolidates all that I do. So
I was going to just start, as we always do, with, you know, where are we now? But I'm not, because I know where we are now. Because President Trump had a physical examination, not by a doctor of his choice, but by the White House physician, the same guy who examined Obama.
Right.
This is not like, it's not like Trump brought in Vinnie Bumbatz. It's not like you see pictures of his doctor with the long hair and you go, who's this guy?
This is a legit guy.
The guy who sent in the one paragraph during the campaign.
He's great. Yeah. So this is a legit guy.
Could have been you.
Ronnie's somebody.
You're a doctor.
I am a doctor, but not that kind of doctor. Who said that Trump is not only in excellent health, but said that his blood pressure is perfectly normal, that he's 6'3", 239, which we're not sure, but did recommend losing 10 to 15 pounds and gave him a 30 out of 30 on a cognitive awareness test.
Yeah.
What is your reaction to all this?
My reaction is all he's got to do is get rid of the cheese on the cheeseburgers and, you know, he's fantastic. He's just great. I like the cognitive test part of it.
He identified a rhinoceros and a camel. I saw that picture. I touched the camel.
Bootsy could have passed.
This is the Montreal Cognitive Assessment, a famous test of cognitive awareness.
The MCA, as we like to call it.
For woke bays.
Yeah.
It asks patients to repeat a list of spoken words. I'm reading from the New York Times here.
Yep.
Identify pictures of animals.
Great, I'm good.
Like a lion or a camel. Draw a cube or draw a clock face set to a particular time. And this test was administered to the president, and he aced the thing. As a stable genius and a guy who has a degree from the University of Pennsylvania, he aced the test. So that results in a front page headline on the New York Times of a kind that I didn't think I'd ever see. After exam, president is found to be of sound mind and body. So there you go. And it's above the fold on page one. So there you go. That's all you need to know.
The stuff that he eats.
And it involves Dr. Lawrence K. Altman, MD, who's the only person at the New York Times who's allowed to have MD
in
his byline.
Okay.
Right.
So with the stuff that he eats, and he does not exercise. He plays golf, but he sits in a car. He doesn't really exercise. The fact that his blood pressure is fine, the fact that everything is fine, the doctor was asked about this, and the doctor said something that is very instructive, which is he's got great genes.
Yeah.
Like that's like Woody Allen said, 80% of life is showing up. If you've got great genes, you can do just about anything.
Well,
you can do anything.
I know Trump somewhat. I've been with him a fair amount. And
he likes you, right?
He used to, but you know everybody used to. Anyway, it's
not everybody.
All right, so. He impresses you as a hale, the old-fashioned word, hale person.
Yeah.
H-A-L-E. He is that, and he's a big guy.
He is big, and
he's a big guy. He has a rosy complexion. When you see him, his face is kind of a symphony of orange and pink. And he strikes you as a healthy guy. He really does. And even though he's big, and even though he famously has this terrible diet. Partly because of his fear of germs and people, you know, either nature or somebody else poisoning him. He eats all this stuff. He has
a fear of germs, so he eats fast food?
Yes. Yes. I know it doesn't
what does
make
that mean?
Sense.
That's the most
he
regulated
trusts
food.
He trusts the machines more than...
He trusts the machines more than the people. And
so he's probably a well-done guy.
He is a well-done
guy. Yeah.
Famously, he eats steaks well done with ketchup. He does strike you as a healthy guy. He does. When you're with him, you
think he weighs much more than 239.
He weighs much more than 239. And as the daughter of a doctor and somebody who worked in this office for several years, I think that doctor went way beyond what he should have been saying yesterday. Good for him for standing up there an hour and taking those questions. But you give the numbers. You describe where the numbers are in the accepted protocols. You do not throw on these adjectives. Yeah. You don't make predictions that he could be great for the rest of this administration and another one if he wants.
I agree with you.
I did not like that one.
What about the cognitive test score? Is that impressive?
Well, yeah.
Well, let's just say that he's on a game show, and they show a picture of a camel and a picture of a rhino, and he gets them right, and he wins 600 and goes to
the next level.
Yeah, I think the game shows are a little harder. I think they're a little
harder. You're not impressed by the test.
I don't know. I'm not sure. But I can also say, I haven't been with him since in person in his office and talking to him face to face, more or less in private since about a year ago. But so I don't know what's happened in the intervening year, although I see him, you know, on all the time in public. He's with it. I mean, the notion that he's somehow losing his mind is, I think, wrong. I think it's totally wrong.
Did you find it interesting, the two drugs that he takes? One of them is a sort of a regular cholesterol, I think, drug.
Low-level cholesterol drug.
And one of them is for his hair.
Yeah.
Propecia for his hair.
Yeah, Propecia can have some side effects. I forget exactly what
they are. Grow another
arm. I don't think they're catastrophic. Yeah.
Makes you tweet uncontrollably, I think.
I mean, the basic point, the larger point here is that Donald Trump is fully aware of everything he's doing.
Of course.
This is not an accident. Nothing about this is accidental. He's not demented. He doesn't have, Alzheimer's. He knows exactly what he's doing. He does these things out of a life of training his impulses to effect, to get him power and money and fame. And that's exactly what he's doing right now.
So I'm interested in this, without using the word, because this is not CNN.
Yeah.
So we're not going to actually use the word. Do you have any doubt that he called those countries what he is alleged to have called those countries? And the second question, which is more important to me, is why are Republican senators, why are people being interviewed saying, I don't recall that. Oh, he didn't. I don't know.
Well, the reason that, he surely did it. Now, what version of excrement plus it was, I don't know. That's a detailed discussion that is, of course, amusing but meaningless, as so much of what we do. But anyway, he likes to have people demonstrate their fealty to him.
Why do we have music playing in here? Is that you?
Yes, sorry.
What was that?
I was downloading a song.
What are you doing? We're doing a show here.
He's multitasking.
I like musical accompaniment.
Yeah, that was nice.
I was working
ahead.
Well, they're lying for him, and they're basically lying for him and to show their loyalty.
He doesn't care.
No, he doesn't care about the truthful whether anybody believes what he says or not.
He doesn't care.
But he cares that other people come to his defense.
I find it more appalling that people under oath lied in his defense than him saying it in the first place.
Yeah, why would you do that?
Well, you do it because you want to show this is how he measures loyalty.
Is there anybody having more fun than him at the moment?
Oh, I don't think he's having that much fun.
You don't?
No. I think he's actually lonely in the White House. I think that he was almost plaintive in the discussion he had the other day about pork barrel. You know, let's go back to the days of pork, because then guys went out to dinner and they could horse trade over stuff.
Yeah.
That was what Donald Trump thought politics was going to be.
Yep. Can't be a guy.
You're going to be sitting in a steakhouse somewhere cutting deals
Gallagher's
over bridges.
At 11 at night, Gallagher's on 52nd Street with the meat in the window.
The meat in the window. That's what he thought being president was going to be.
Yeah.
Instead, it's living in this big drafty house with mice and vermin everywhere and reporters and stuff that he hates.
So every day something new comes up, and of course he just sort of provides diversion to that which comes up by tweeting and so on and so forth. But is the immigration thing, are we going to have no money? Is there going to be no funding? Is the immigration thing dead?
Well, the Democrats took a lot of heat for not using the tax bill and other must-pass legislation last year to get a deal for the Dreamers.
Yeah.
And they took enormous heat from their base for that. And now the base, meaning the Hispanic community,
it's all
really
about
most,
the base,
most of the
not treble.
It's base, not treble.
Yeah.
And most of the Democratic, a lot of the Democratic Party is saying, if you guys do not attach this Dreamer deal, if you don't get a Dreamer deal as part of this must-pass, shut-the-government-down legislation, forget it. And so the Democrats are under tremendous pressure, and I don't know whether they're willing to relent and be seen as defeated again by the Latino community and by a lot of other progressives in the party. And that means it's possible that we'll have a shutdown. Now, earlier last year, Donald Trump, I thought wisely, one of the things that he did that was smart was to punt on the government shutdown thing last year. I think he wanted to get the economy going, which he's done.
Yes.
He's actually done some things that he...
Stock market is at 87,000.
Well, and also, if you tell the corporate world, you know, don't worry, you can build whatever you want, wherever you want, however you want, just do it.
Yeah.
Just do it. We don't care how you do
it. Let's kill some polar bears.
Yeah.
Well, who cares?
So that's good. He hasn't wanted to do that. But I think this one he wants
to... Tori's taking notes.
I think... No, she's not. She's thinking of something smart, actually smart to say, unlike what I'm doing. But anyway, so...
Grocery list.
It's a long show.
Hold a bit.
I think he's going to shut it down because he just wants to play to his own base, which are the people like Tom Cotton and Senator Perdue of Georgia, who were in that room, and who he was trying to impress when he used the S word. Tori.
A question. This is very inside baseball, but trying to follow that meeting last week, which all turns into this ridiculous conversation about what he may have said, Democrats went down there thinking, we've got a deal, right? Based on conversations they had with him. So they think, we've got a deal. And they go down, and they did not expect to see people like Tom Cotton there. Who controls access to that Oval Office and who's in it? It's John Kelly. So what I wonder is, did John Kelly say, whoa, wait a minute, who knows what Trump was doing, what he was saying to the Democrats? Kelly gets wind of that there might be a deal on immigration, which he doesn't like, and he makes sure those others are down there. Because everyone seems surprised that the Tom Cottons of the world were there.
Well, I would certainly agree with you that they wouldn't have been there without the knowledge of John Kelly. But you raise a very good question. I don't know whether it was Kelly more than Trump who killed the deal by bringing those people in.
Uh-huh.
I don't think Kelly would have done it without Donald Trump's approval and say so. So in the end, I think it's the president.
I think
so
Trump wanted a deal.
Let's get to
I think it's the president.
Let's get to the most important.
But
thing.
Then he gets when he gets Stephen Miller in the room, the other guy, the young guy, the bald head guy, who's vicious on this topic. Then it was dead.
Let's guess the weight. What do you got? What do you got? You got 255.
Oh no, I got 267.
26. Howard, what do you got?
I'll go right around that. Tori's the daughter of a doc. I'll go with her.
Michael, what do you think he weighs?
265.
Nigel,
415.
415. I think you're way over on that. I'm going low. I'm going to go 252. 252. He's thick. You know, he's a thick guy. He's a big guy.
By the way, to go to Tori's point about the doctor, he was way over what he should have been doing there.
You want to say stay in your lane, Don.
He's campaigning to make sure that he stays in the job.
If you want to have fun, look at the stuff online of Trump next to Ovechkin.
Is he bigger?
Who was 6'3".
Ovechkin's thick, too. He's big, strong.
He looks like a 6-year-old next to Trump.
Trump's that big?
Yes. Whoa. So...
What did we do the other? We did this the other day about James Brown at his height. You know how much weight James lost, like over 100 pounds.
Lost a lot of weight, yes.
Lost over 100 pounds. Anyway, all right, we'll get out of here. We'll come back with email and a jingle. Yes,
that's right.
I'm Tony Kornheiser.
This is the Tony Kornheiser Show.
Well, it's my usual walk in the morning before Jessie will eat her frisbees. And right then in my mind it is dawning, was that moon on my side of the street?
That's funny.
Now does the sun always rise on the same side? Is the earth spinning faster or slow? You can tell that I'm just no science guy. Can't someone get me Galileo? And tell me when I see the stars that shine on Northwest DC. Are they the same stars they see down in Tennessee? Can I just hear from someone with info for life? Can we just get a little bit more info for life?
Grant Weiss, that's great. That's absolutely great. And I don't think I'm the only person who is confused by the movement of the moon. That, you know, you get up at the same time and the moon isn't where it was the day before.
Post-16th century, you're one of the few.
The sun is relatively the same. The moon moves.
And plus, we get to hear Van Morrison.
Yeah, before we get to the mailbag, let me thank my colleague at ESPN, Brian Windhorst, for coming on the show. Let me thank our sponsors, Indochino and Upside. Remember to listen and subscribe to new and archived episodes of The Tony Kornheiser Show wherever you listen to podcasts, including Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Play. If you listen to the show through iTunes, please leave us a review. From Barry Kelly, class of 2017, so that's this year.
Oh, yes, it
in,
is.
In Oklahoma University, Norman, Oklahoma. So you don't know what you would do in the event the emergency broadcast system alerted you to a ballistic missile launch, really? As incredible as it seems, I have 99% certainty your reaction would be something like this. Me. Michael, there's fallout here. Is there fallout where you are? Michael, I'm in South Carolina with the in-laws, and you're still not invited. Ordinary Bill from Kensington. I can't believe that if you received an alert that you only had 38 minutes until an inbound missile strike was potentially going to hit you, that you didn't know what to do or where to go. First, you call Michael. Second, Connecticut Avenue would almost certainly have four lanes going north to make evacuation quicker.
Probably.
Assuming this is true, you should be able to get up to Columbia in about 16 minutes. 2 minutes to walk in, 2 minutes to get on your shoes, 4 minutes for warm-up swings on the range. That allows for 14 minutes to play the first hole. Now, assuming that the first targets are downtown and on the Virginia side, you might even be able to get a few holes in before Bethesda Naval becomes a prime target. In the meantime, you'd be looping around Columbia like the Bishop in Caddyshack, with Carl Speckler telling you, I keep playing, I don't think the heavy stuff is coming down for a while. While you're having the round of your life, hopefully around 18 when that last swing goes in for birdie, and that is when Rocket Man would finally get around to taking out the formerly undisclosed location. You go down in a blaze of brilliant light, but your demise will be softened by the knowledge that if you've met your demise, the Purple Line has almost assuredly met its demise.
That's
as well.
Right there.
From Tom Dore in Chicago, Illinois. The past 2 days, Tony, I've listened to the podcast. I've watched PTI. I think I've noticed something. Do you have a cough? Indeed, I do. From Andrew Reister, or Reister, from the peanut gallery below you, or the round table by the fireplace. Do the odds... Are you here right now? Okay, good. Do the odds for the Rogers-Patrick relationship improve, Tori, since she's retiring after this year's Indy 500?
Might.
Could she be out of the biz?
Yeah,
might. So you think that's better? Luke Creswell writes, Dear Mr. Dr. Tony, a bomber is a nickname for a 22-ounce bottle of beer. As a millennial little from Portland, Oregon, I'm a de facto expert on this, as they practically hand you a bomber of Imperial Dry Hopped IPA upon arrival in this fair city. But please do not confuse bomber with pounder can, man can, tall boy, sixer, rack, brick, growler, howler, stubby, nubby, shorty, mini, split, or pony. Do you know, Michael, do you know what all those are?
I knew a few of those.
All woke bays. Yeah.
Man can, brick. You know what a growler is.
Yes, I know a growler, I know a pony, I know a tall boy, but some of those sound made up.
Mike from Burke, Virginia. Regarding knowing your neighbors, I've lived in the same neighborhood for almost 20 years, which now makes us the senior residents in our immediate neighbor zone. Our relationships with our neighbors range from pretty close friends, cocktails in the summer, we'll let contractors into each other's houses, to, hey, how are you? Would you pick up my mail while we're away this weekend? To, I'd just as soon nod at you and leave it at that. We do have one neighbor, and I'm pretty sure he's not a little, who's a little scarier, and about whom we have confidently predicted that one day we will come home to find a Fox 5 news crew on his lawn, and reference will be made to large stockpiles of weapons and canned goods in his basement. Good fences make good neighbors, Mr. Tony. This is in reference to that story, that amazing story yesterday in California, in a regular, you know, in a regular subdivision of a regular development, with houses on both sides, with houses all around, and 13 children in
neighbors
bondage.
Did you ever hear that Tom Waits talking song? What's he doing in there?
No, is that about neighbors?
It's about, what's he doing?
Just really
there?
Weird. From Rashid Al Khalifa from the Kingdom of Bahrain, who has been here.
Oh, yes.
So I'm driving home from the farm, listening to Kip Sheeman on his podcast, not on the 980 app, and he was doing a top of the hour update. He mentions weather, specifically says it's going to rain. This reminds me I should call my dad more because it hasn't rained in Bahrain in like 10 months. So back to Kip, his brief weather forecast on his show left me confused. He was not enthusiastic about it. No mention of weather spotters, Gladys or Herb or whatever he calls them from up in Potomac, or Lusby. He didn't reference the NAM or anything. What is the deal with Kip? Is he just saving all that riveting weather talk for you, or has he stopped caring since the infamous winter weather forecast? Do you know?
I don't know.
Charlie Burtz, Springfield, Virginia. Harry's products have won countless grooming awards. So first of all, there are awards for grooming, let alone multiple. I know we hate that every kid gets a participation trophy, but are we rewarded for grooming? Are these the kind with Fred Willard giving commentary about bench press? You're out on your bike tonight, everyone, as always. Do wear white.
You know what ought to happen to them? They ought to be stabbed by cocktail fork.
Thanks for coming, everybody.
Fooling.